Let me go ahead and call the Mesa City Council study session to order. Hope everyone had a happy new year. There were some interesting bowl games in the valley. The Fiesta Bowl game, I think everyone's still talking about. That one even kept me up. So this is Thursday, January 4th, 2007, our 7:30 a.m. study session. We have eight items. First one is to review items on the agenda for the January 8th regular council meeting. You want to go to that in your packet. This is the first meeting in January, and I will be doing a mayor's state of the city address, kind of a recap of where we're at, a little review of our retreat items and what we hope to accomplish in the upcoming years. Anything else on page one?
Mayor, just quickly, yes. a little item that's somewhat new is the presentation of an exceptional customer service award. We'd like to do this maybe once a quarter. We have a process where employees who provide exceptional service to our customers are going to be recognized on a quarterly basis. This would be the first one we would do. So we'd like to spend just a few moments at the beginning of the meeting to acknowledge the person that will be receiving that. So that's just something we'd like to do over the year. So thank you.
Okay. I have visited several other cities, and sometimes they recognize lots of things, from art students in elementary schools to the only caution is that make sure that it's absolutely something that is sustainable, deserving, and deserves that type of attention and recognition. It's kind of like me doing proclamations, I just don't do them. So that would be my only cautionary note. All right, Councilmember Griswold.
We'll be celebrating our 33rd anniversary, and I will not be here for the meeting on Monday. We're going to be taking a trip.
Okay. And I believe the Vice Mayor will be calling in that meeting also. All right. Okay, page two. Getting to liquor license applications. Page three. Continuing. On to page four. Contracts. On 5B, I think that was off consent. It says a three-year supply contract for asphalt materials. Those are, it's like the asphalt product itself. There's no liquids involved in that contract, I don't believe.
I don't believe so, Mayor, but we weren't sure from your perspective.
Okay, well, I read it through, and we don't do any of the mix materials. It's just the liquids, if at all. So I think we can put that one back on unless somebody else has an issue in that. All right, that's page four, page five. Councilmember Whelan.
Mayor, I've got a conflict on 5E. The Nesbitt family or customers of my security business, so I'll be declaring conflict.
Okay. Anything else on page five? Page six?
Excuse me, Mayor.
Yes.
We took that off consent. We assumed that you would have a potential conflict also.
Actually, I will. Yes. So we'll have both Mike and I will declare conflicts on that. And let's see, the Vice Mayor is gone. So Councilmember Jones, you'll take that item at the council meeting. All right. All right. Let me write that down there. Okay, page five, page six. These are all traffic modifications. Page seven continues. Page 8, have some annexations. Continuing on page 9, on 6G, on page 9, I believe that this is part of the project that is located somewhat in my backyard. I've consistently declared a conflict on this one, even though it is on the other side of Dobson, so I will not discuss or vote on this. Had to do with the development of three auto dealerships and an auto body shop at the Red Mountain Freeway and Dobson Road. Tom.
Mayor, for the same reasons, my employer has land that is adjacent to this and does wrap around and comes within 300 feet on the other side of the freeway. So I'll continue to declare a conflict on this as well.
Okay. All right. This is, I believe, just for introduction. And that's on page 9, page 10, following resolutions. Rex.
Just a question on 7C, if possible. Is it possible to annex this piece of property using Broadway? There's a lot of good growth going in this area. This is a challenging area. We had talked about if we took Broadway down there. We've got a couple other properties right near it, I believe.
Mayor, Councilmember Griswold, in the map that we have here, it's pretty much in the middle of the unincorporated areas between Ellsworth and Chrisman. We'll look at it, but it would seem unlikely that we'd be able to do that.
Well, we'd had requests from right the property above it that stretches to Main Street and the one on the other side of it. And there's a lot of things blocking it. There's sort of a key property that's blocking. Some other people have requested annexation, so.
We'll look at it.
Thank you.
Okay. Vice Mayor Walters.
Ms. Spinner, using the philosophy that it is surrounded by incorporated Mesa, wouldn't that allow for it to be annexed?
Yes, under the city's current policy. I guess I would have to look at this, Vice Mayor. Let me turn to John, since he's going to be more familiar with this particular project.
Mayor, Vice Mayor, the standard that the council has agreed to thus far is that we can skip across the street as long as it's 100% across from existing city limits. We haven't taken the step yet of going further than that where there's no connection besides just an intervening street. I think maybe that's a case here, but again, we need to look at the maps and see where this is in relationship to existing boundaries.
I'm not sure what our logic was in doing that. I think we should be able to use that same argument that we are completely surrounded by city.
And we
if they're interested in annexing.
We had that discussion with the council, and I think those were the guidelines that it be somewhat contiguous. I think the council has requested, and I think the plan is that we're going to bring this back and discuss it again on whether council wants to expand that policy. But at this point, as John said, the council gave direction that it should be contiguous in some manner.
Right, Mayor, Vice Mayor.
Honestly, I don't remember why we said that.
It is an item. The GDC has asked for a discussion of how Glendale does theirs, and it's our understanding they do that kind of approach in Glendale, so we're preparing that presentation for the next GDC meeting.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. That's page 10. Page 11. Okay, page 12, subdivision plats. Okay, let's go back to the study session. Item number two is here a presentation to discuss and provide direction on election issues related to spending limitation options, better known as home rule. Jamie?
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Jamie Warner and I are here today to talk to you about an issue that has developed because of a recent change in state statute that could possibly have an impact on our budget for fiscal year 08-09. We are not bringing forward a recommendation at this point. We simply wanted to advise Council of the issues and present some of the alternatives that currently exist and let you know that we are continuing to look for other alternatives as we go through the budget process. We're also seeking any input or direction from the council at this time. Let me start with explaining what the issue is and how this issue came to be. Mesa is currently under what's known as the home rule alternative, which gives council the flexibility to spend the revenue received by the city. We obviously still have to present a balanced budget and comply with that balanced budget, but under the home rule alternative, the council has flexibility. This home rule alternative expires every 4 years unless it is renewed by the voters. We are, as you know, under our charter, we have council elections in March of even numbered years. The home rule was first adopted by the voters in, I think there was one four-year period in the early 90s. Most recently, it was considered and adopted by the voters in 2000. 4 years later, in March of 2004, the council again asked the voters if it would, if the voters would consider a home rule alternative. The voters approved that, and we are currently under the home rule alternative. And it is set to expire in June of 2008, unless it is again considered and adopted by the voters prior to that time. However, with the new change in the state statute, which moves the council elections from March of 2008 to September or November of 2008, council cannot present this issue to the voters again until September or November of 2008. That means that the home rule alternative will expire before the voters have the option of considering renewal of it. This creates a one-year gap for fiscal year 08-09, and we are here today to talk to you about what that means for the City of Mesa, for the budget for 08-09, what the alternatives are, and when council would have to act if it chooses one alternative. So I've provided a packet, basically a summary of the council report that I've provided, and I'd like to go through each one of these alternatives and again discuss with you what it means for the City of Mesa and when council would have to act if it chooses one of these alternatives. If council does nothing and no alternative is adopted by the voters by June of 2008, according to the Arizona Constitution, Mesa would be subject to the state-imposed expenditure limitation. And this is how much money can the city spend in a year. Even if the revenues exceed it, there's a expenditure limitation. And the Constitution sets out a kind of a default expenditure limitation, and that is called the state-imposed expenditure limitation. And under the Arizona Constitution, it establishes an Economic Estimate Commission, or the EEC, and they are charged with determining each year what the city's expenditure limitation would be under this alternative. And it starts with, the EEC starts with a base figure. That base figure is what is the actual expenditures by the city for fiscal year 1979-1980. So that's the number it starts with. And for Mesa, that was $54 million approximately. The EEC would then take that $54 million and apply a formula that's set out in the Arizona Constitution that's primarily based on population growth and inflation. And the EEC would apply that formula and then would tell the cities, here is your expenditure limitation for the current fiscal year. Jamie has recently received the final numbers for fiscal year 05-06. And we've looked at that to see, okay, under the state-imposed expenditure limitation, what would that mean for Mesa if we were under it for fiscal year 05-06? And the numbers show that Mesa would have exceeded the state-imposed expenditure limitation by over $60 million for fiscal year 05-06. The state law imposes certain financial penalties for exceeding the expenditure limitations. We'll talk about what they are in a minute, but I just want to let you know that's the downside or the effect of exceeding the expenditure limitation. Jamie has projected what our expenditures would be for fiscal year 08-09, which is this gap that we're facing. What our expenditures would be and what the state-imposed expenditure limitation would be. And his projections show that Mesa would be over $100 million above the state-imposed expenditure limitation for fiscal year 08-09, this one-year gap. So the Mesa would have the option of either reducing its budget to comply with the state-imposed expenditure limitation or facing a possible penalty, which you'll hear is approximately $23 million. Now, under the Constitution, it says this is the default. This is what the cities have to comply with. Unless the voters have approved, majority vote, unless the voters have approved one of the alternatives that the Constitution establishes, We believe there are three possible alternatives for the city of Mesa. Two that will not fill in this gap for 08-09, but will address future years. And we'll go through each one of these individually. The first alternative that's set up in the Constitution is the Home Rule Expenditure Limitation. And as I said, that's what we are currently under. This alternative allows the City Council the flexibility to maintain a current budget, or I'm sorry, a balanced budget, but still gives it the flexibility to adjust the expenditures to the needs of the city. The Home Rule Alternative can be referred to the voters by two-thirds votes of the council, and, or through the initiative process. It must be adopted by the voters by a majority vote. It is in effect for 4 years. After 4 years, if it is not renewed by the voters, it expires, and the city either is subject to the state-imposed expenditure limitation or some other alternative if that has been approved by the voters. Because our elections have been changed by the state statute, the next regularly scheduled council election is September 9th, 2008, or November 4th, 2008. If council wishes to place this on the ballot for September 2008, the council must call the election by May 12th, 2008. If it's approved, it would be effective July 1st, 2009. So although it's approved in September, it would not be effective until the next fiscal year. That's again why we have that gap for fiscal year 08-09. The next alternative that is established in the Constitution is called the Permanent Adjustment of Expenditure Base. This alternative allows the voters to increase the base figure. So as I said, under the state-imposed expenditure limitation, the EEC starts with the actual expenditures in 1979-1980, which is $54 million for Mesa. This alternative would allow the voters to increase that base that the EEC uses to calculate the expenditure limitation for the current year. For example, and I'm making these numbers up, so I don't know if this is what we would have to consider, but the council would have to ask the voters to consider adjusting the base an additional 10, 20, 30 million, whatever the council felt necessary. So it would bump up the base from 54 million to 75 million. The EEC would then take that adjusted base and apply the formula to determine, okay, what is the current year's expenditure limitation. One of the differences between this alternative and the Home Rule alternative is this does not expire. So it does not have to be renewed by the voters every 4 years as the Home Rule alternative does. This alternative can be referred to the voters by two-thirds vote of the council or through the initiative process. Like Home Rule, this alternative can only be presented to the voters at a regularly scheduled council election. So again, given the amendment to the state statute changing our elections from March to September or November, this alternative is not available to be presented to the voters until September 08 or November 08. So this is not a resolution for the gap in fiscal year 08-09, but it could be considered a solution for future years.
Just a point of clarification. Whenever a vote is taken by the electorate on a lid limit issue, they cannot go into effect till the next fiscal year. So a vote in September, November of 08 forces that will not go into effect till July 1st of 09.
Vice Mayor.
And Debbie, you might have said this, but how does this work in a city that's growing like Mesa is, where you have, you know, the population back when this was set in 79-80, was it 79-80?
Yes.
Yes.
The population then was much smaller than it is now. If we had reached build out, then setting this, you know, this permanent base adjustment would make sense. What happens when you haven't reached
build
kind
out
of your maximum number of people?
This adjustment still is subject to the formula that will be applied by the EEC. So instead of using the 54 million, the 1979-1980 expenditures by Mesa, the EEC would then apply the adjusted base, 75 million. It would then apply the formula, which includes population growth and inflation since 1979-80, to determine what our expenditure limitation for fiscal year 09-10 would be.
So it does take all of that into account, even though you've adjusted
Yes, it does.
Okay, thank you.
Let me ask one more word. Could we have combined the expenditure limitation question with our last sales tax so that we automatically, when the sales tax, if it was voter approved, to increase it from 1.25 to 1.75, the money could be spent? So right now it sounds like with the expenditure limitation, unless you renew that, you can't spend voter approved dollars. Is there a way to link the two, or is this time frame you'd have to have one election to do it, and you'd have to do it on this September election date because that's the only one allowed? So we, even looking at future elections, we can't tie the two together so that we can spend the money that the voters approve to increase?
I don't believe so, Mayor, because the only way to increase or to adjust the expenditure limitation is through one of these methods. So you could have the home rule and in effect, and then if the voters approve additional sales tax revenue, the home rule alternative gives you the ability to spend that money. But I don't believe that without home rule, even if the voters approve the increased sales tax, you would not have the authority to
spend. I was just trying to tie the two to the same election.
You'd have to have separate questions. Right. You can't link them on a single
question. Can you put them on the same ballot, or does it have to be this September ballot? Right.
It has to be the September ballot, and that's set out in the Constitution.
Well, we might have,
it has to be on the election where the council is being considered,
September,
right?
Correct.
September.
Okay.
September.
So, Mary, your point is right to the point of, when you hear that number about that the city's budget is $60 million higher than the Constitution. Well, what drove that? Well, one of the big, largest issues that drove that are voter-approved, revenues, whether it's the sales tax, the quality of life, Prop 400. All those get counted into that number, and that's what then becomes additive to that, what puts us out of sync with the constitutional number. So
I'm just trying to see if there was a way to tie
link
the two
together. And I don't believe the way they're, because they're separated, they're considered really separate issues within the state law or the Constitution, is what I understand.
Right. Yeah. Tom.
Mayor, I think if we had known that the legislature was going to eliminate our March and May of 2008 elections, we would have, in fact, probably called for the adjustment in the May election of this year so that they would have been linked.
Yeah.
But we didn't know the legislature was going to do it, or when they did it, the timeline for calling that election had already passed. So,
okay. All right. Vice Mayor.
And let me just ask you a question, follow up, Chris, on what you were saying. All dollars here, including like our federal Homeland Security grants, all of those kinds of things get included, or are those outside of this?
Grants are excluded from the expenditure limitation. Interest income is excluded, bonds and debt are excluded, and the majority of our HERF money are excluded, and those are the major exclusions.
But Prop 400 money, which isn't HERF money, which was approved,
that's not excluded.
So we have all of that Prop 400 money that's coming that potentially we wouldn't be able to use.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so the home rule and the permanent adjustment expenditure base are options for under the current statute with the election in September, are options for beginning fiscal year 09-10, which would still leave the gap for 08-09. There is one alternative that can be used to address the issue in 08-09, and that is the one-time override alternative. And let me see. The one-time override alternative allows the voters to approve the city to exceed the expenditure limitation for 1 year only. And it can be referred to the voters by two-thirds of the vote of the council. But this is a little different than the other two alternatives, because the council must identify the amount of the expenditure, so how much you believe you're going to exceed the expenditure for that one fiscal year, and it has to identify the purpose that that money will be used for. For example, police department or fire department. And that information needs to be spelled out in the publicity pamphlet. And if approved, that money cannot be used for any purposes other than those items identified in the publicity pamphlet. And it has to be budgeted for separately and identified separately so that it can we can ensure that that override is only spent for the reason set forth in the publicity pamphlet. It would apply for one fiscal year, and at the end of that fiscal year, unless some other alternative is adopted by the voters, the city would be subject to the state-imposed expenditure limitation again. This option is also a little different than the other two alternatives because this can be presented or referred to the voters at a special election. Only a special election in May. It would be set for the third Tuesday in May. So there's May 15th, 2007 is available. However, if council is interested in placing a one-time override alternative on the ballot for May 2007, it has to be called by January 12th. So we would have to call the election and really accelerate public hearings and a number of other steps required by the statute. Another alternative is to consider placing this on the ballot for May 20th, 2008. It would still be adopted by the voters before fiscal year 08-09 begins, so it would be a resolution to that one-year gap. If council's interested in that, council would have to call the election by January 21st, 2008. The city clerk has estimated that the cost of a special election is approximately $240,000. Again, if this alternative is adopted, it's effective July 1st, 2008, and it would expire June 30th, 2008. So you would again then consider going beyond 2008. Does council want to refer to the voters either the home rule alternative or the permanent base adjustment alternative for the period beginning fiscal year 2009? Okay, let me just talk briefly. It's included in the council report. What are the sanctions if a city exceeds the expenditure limitation? These are set out in state statute, and the state would impose a penalty by withholding state shared revenue. And the statute states that if the city exceeds the expenditure limitation by less than 5%, the penalty equals the amount of the excess expenditure. If the city exceeds the expenditure limitation by 5% but less than 10%, the penalty is three times the excess expenditure. And if the city exceeds the expenditure limitation by 10% or more of the total expenditure, then the penalty is either five times the excess expenditure or one-third the allocation of the state income tax, whichever is less. Going back to Jamie's calculations for fiscal year 05-06, where we would have been $60 million above the state-imposed expenditure limitation, that would have resulted in a penalty of over $14 million. Projecting that to 08-09 fiscal budget, if we exceed the state expenditure limitation by $100 million, the result is a $23 million penalty. That penalty would be imposed in fiscal year 09-10. Okay. So, Mayor and Council, with that, we'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Okay. I think I remember one nuance of this when we were looking at it before, is bond debt is not part of your expenditure limitation.
That's correct.
So one thing you could do if you really had to, I guess, or it's not very good accounting or business practices, is you just bond for a lot of those expenditures.
I kind of looked at that as an option because there is an option for the expenditure limitation where you can do a capital project accumulation. Right. Basically, you can use CIP as an exemption instrument. But looking at the 05-06 expenditures, we were over that $60 million over was beyond just the capital portion, which meant operational costs were part of that. So even if we were to try to use bonds as a vehicle, operationally it would appear that we're going to go over the limit. We may not be at 10%, it may be less, but that doesn't look to be a total solution or an alternative.
Yeah, I don't like that way of doing it, but I just thought it was interesting the way the law was written that the bond debt is not included in the calculation.
We do a lot of bond debt, especially in our utility areas, and I don't know that, frankly, there would be a lot for us to move revenue CIP to bonds to do a lot of, okay. That we would gain a lot.
All right. Kyle.
There's one alternative that I didn't hear here, and that's going to our legislature and having them fix what they created, having a one-time exemption for this as we get into the cycle that they forced us into.
Well, we are, since this issue is fairly recent, since we just got the numbers, we are exploring all different options, and one is a possible resolution through the legislature, and we'll continue to update the council as we go forward with those discussions.
Is it, except for their actions, this would not be an issue at this point. Need to make sure that's clear to everybody.
Yeah. I would assume that when they changed the election laws and they forced us to have a special election, if that's the case, that they funded the $250,000 that it would cost to do it. So if nothing else, ask them for the $250,000 that they're now imposing as a city burden. I mean, there's probably several other options, but that's certainly one of them that ought to be explored. It's an unfunded mandate that they now created on us to have a special election. All right. Rex?
That was exactly my point. You know, we have a balanced budget now. The voters approved a sales tax to improve the roads and get them fixed up. They approved Prop 400 to build the freeways. All that money is now being penalized against us because of this changing the dates. Could we actually charge them for the election? That's my question. Unfunded mandates, I think it's a great one.
I'll send them over a bill. I just don't know if they'll be paying. I think the governor does that to the federal government for immigration, too. Mike?
What other cities are impacted?
Nobody.
At this point, it would appear that we're the only one, because the legislation that changed the dates, I think, was for 175,000 population or greater. The other cities that would meet that requirement of being that size of population or greater are not on an 04, 05 home rule option that we are. So
their date is, they're odd.
They either have other dates, or they have a permanent adjustment, or they're using some other alternative.
Okay. Any other comments on this one? Vice Mayor.
Thank you. I think Scottsdale Scottsdale and Chandler were the other cities that were impacted, and Scottsdale just did a permanent base adjustment last year, didn't they?
I think that, or they used a, let me see.
I think they did. I seem to recall listening to their ads about, you know, how they were going to need the permanent base adjustment so that, and I think that that's the one piece in this that I would really like some more information on. We have not really looked at that. I don't think we've looked at that as seriously as we probably need to. And in light of needing to do something, whether we go for the one-time election or, you know, whatever we do here, I think we ought to look at the numbers in terms of the permanent base adjustment and what that would mean for us. And I would appreciate at some point, Mayor, that we have a study session where we really look at that seriously when we decide how we're moving forward on this.
I would agree. Tom?
Mayor, I think it's fairly obvious that we probably can't get our act together in time to do a 2007 one-time permanent or one-time alternative adjust, the override alternative. So it seems to me we have two alternatives in 2008, either having back-to-back adjustment elections, one in May of 2008 and one in either September or November of 2008, or have one in September and October and bite the bullet in 09-10. So none of the choices are attractive, but I think we do need to have clarification as to what the number would be for the permanent base adjustment. I think that's the, I mean, we really have two decisions to make. Do we want to go to the voters in September or October, or September or November of 2008 with either the regular home rule vote, or do we want to do a permanent adjustment? That's one issue. And then the second issue is, do we want to try to fill the gap by having the one-time override alternative, which May of 2008 seems to me to be the only date that we can do that. But the bigger issue is, to me, is the one-year gap's important and difficult and troubling, but it's the permanent issue that I think we need to try to strike a resolution at. So we really need to focus on what the size of that adjustment would need to be, and then we can make that decision in before January 21st of 2008.
All right. Okay. I would suggest that we take a legislative approach to this too, and call attention to the fact that this is an unfunded mandate that'll cost the city of Mesa $250,000 for a special election. See if there are any legislative remedies that we might be able to find. And then let's bring it back and let's talk on the study session about a permanent versus a one-time adjustment. I think I've heard that discussion also, and what that base adjustment would need to be to incorporate the Prop 400, the sales tax, and some of the other voter-approved initiatives that have increased our expenditures in the city. Tom?
Just occurred to me, let me ask. It's my understanding that the requirement of having this override or home rule election on a regular council election is constitutional.
That's correct.
Right, that's in the Constitution. So we really don't have time to get a legislative fix for the constitutional issue. But so I think if there is going to be a legislative remedy, it may have to be to go back and ask the legislature to put our council elections in 2008 back on March and May. That way it avoids the unfunded mandate. It'd be like a one-time exemption to exempt us from that state statute.
Now you're trying to get out a little early, Tom.
I probably have a conflict on this now that you raise that, Kyle. I'll be happy to lobby the legislature for that objective, for that additional reason as well. But I think that may be the easiest legislative fix is just to, for one time, because of what it's going to do to us, to push us back to March and May. I don't know whether that's possible, but I don't see a way of having a legislative fix for when we have to hold the override or home rule elections, because that's in the Constitution. So just.
That's correct. We're exploring that and possibly some other legislative options for the 08-09 fiscal year.
Okay. Mike?
Just one other issue. You know, we split our elections so that only half the city votes on any given election cycle except for the mayoral. That would be also cumbersome, the fact that you've just got three people running, but you'd have a citywide election for an override, which further confuses the matter. In my opinion.
Well, we have typically held it in the year with the mayor election, so it's a citywide election.
Which would delay it two more years if you wait to do that, because the next one is not a mayor. Yeah, it is a mayor, so it would work. Okay.
Okay.
Mayor?
Thank you.
Just quickly, I think we told you this once before, but this may be Jamie's last appearance before the council. He'll be leaving the city at the end of the month, so we just want to. I'm not sure this was the presentation he wanted to go out on, but he will be leaving the city at the end of the month, and we just want to thank him for all his efforts during the last, certainly the last couple of years, and the efforts that he's put together with his budget. So, anyway, thank you, Jamie.
Tom.
At least that explains why he wasn't taking notes on what I was asking him to do.
Ask whatever you want, right?
He'll get right back to you.
All right. Item number three is discuss, consider, and provide direction regarding the 2007 state legislative agenda.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. I'm here with Scott Butler today to talk about, to provide a state legislative preview, seek Council input and direction on our proposed legislative priorities. And you have a council report in your packet, and we're going to go through a brief PowerPoint. Scott Butler is going to be our day-to-day point person at the legislature. I'll be assisting, helping, but Scott's going to kick this off.
Great. Good morning, Mayor and Council. Just quickly, as we walk through this PowerPoint, just some perspective on the composition of the legislature following the November 06 elections. And the first slide demonstrates the change in partisan makeup of the legislature between the 48th legislature, which will be sworn in on Monday, and the 47th legislature, which is outgoing. The real difference is, of course, in the House, where it's tightened up between the two parties and should present an interesting dynamic. As far as legislative leadership goes, the House leadership will continue. House will continue to be led by Speaker Jim Wyers of Phoenix. The big change in the Senate is that Senator Tim Bee of Tucson will be taking the helm, replacing Ken Bennett of Prescott. And President Bee has really emphasized his that his agenda will be a more rural Arizona, a non-Maricopa agenda when it comes to transportation and other matters. So we'll probably see that perspective brought forward from the state Senate, though I will note that the majority leader this year is Thayer Verschuer, one of our Mesa delegation members, Mr. Verschuer of Gilbert, and look forward to him serving in that capacity with the Senate leadership. Just very quickly, and I won't go through it all, but with our Mesa delegation, as you can see, of the 18 House committees, we have seven from the city of Mesa, that represent portions of the city of Mesa. So the city of Mesa is certainly well represented when it comes to committee chairman, in the House delegation. Same goes for the Senate, where we have three committee chairs, Karen Johnson, Chuck Gray, and Jay Tibbs Franey, all chairing committees in the state Senate. Moving on now, we'll start talking about some specific priority issues, and I'll turn it back over to Jim to talk about state shared revenue.
I don't think it's any surprise that once again our top priority we recommend is the preservation of state shared revenues. State shared revenues have become increasingly under attack by the legislature in the past couple of years. We've had legislation introduced in each of the last 2 years, including by the Senator Probst chairman, to eliminate state income tax, urban revenue sharing for cities over 100,000. We successfully defeated that, but it seems to be getting more and more attention. Also last year, the state for FY08-09 state income urban revenue sharing pre-appropriated the money for that year instead of giving what would normally be the straight 15% of whatever is collected 2 years prior. We receive state revenue sharing 2 years after it's collected. And just to focus a little bit on the importance of state shared revenue, the city receives expected to receive $148.7 million in state shared revenue this year. The five principal components of that is income tax or urban revenue sharing, the sales tax, highway user revenue funds, vehicle license tax, and the lottery fund monies known as the LTAF monies. And they represent roughly 32% of our net total net revenues, or 29.6% of our general government operations and maintenance budget. So obviously any negative impact would significantly impact our ability to deliver services.
Rex?
State shared revenue, these are taxes that our residents pay to the state in income tax and sales tax, et cetera, that is returned to us to pay for police and fire and different funds. But they're all generated within our city? Is that basically by a formula?
Mayor, Councilmember Griswold, our residents all pay these tax, but it's not just we don't just get back what is necessarily generated from what is collected in Mesa. Each of these have formulas. For instance, the urban revenue sharing, we get 15%. Cities and incorporated cities and towns get have gotten 15% of the total amount of state income tax collected statewide. State sales tax, cities and towns get 25% of the original state sales tax base, and that's redistributed. So each have their own formulas. But the larger question is, yes, you know, our residents pay mostly these state taxes, and then by formula, a percentage of that comes back.
We get a small percentage back.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Kyle?
Jim, just a brief history of how this even came about, how we fell into this model of state shared revenues was years ago when revenues were tight and cities were going to start imposing all different taxing mechanisms, even a income tax, city income taxes, and the state legislature, they made an agreement, said, you don't do that, we'll share state revenues. And if they don't share them the way that they agreed to way back when, is that a breach of contract and we go for alternative income?
Mayor, Councilmember Jones, you're largely correct. For instance, the income tax revenue sharing was based upon an agreement that cities, some cities were looking at imposing, you know, their own income tax. Many of these have been sales tax, income tax, LTAF, the VLT was the trade-off for the VLT money was the trade-off for cities not imposing an income tax. Income tax, sales tax, LTAF were all either initiative referendums, but the voters at some point in time from the 60s, 70s, did vote to share these taxes, these revenues, a portion of them back with the cities. So, you know, we feel, unfortunately, they're not voter protected because they were approved prior to the Voter Protection Act several years ago. So the legislature does have the ability, if they so chose, to reduce what they give to the cities.
They have the ability to tinker with decisions that were made years ago that will directly affect us.
That's correct. And it's, you know, as we point out each and every year, this is a revenue sharing we believe has been a very successful model for this state. And the fact is, you know, as we've argued in the past, you know, we've created Williams Gateway as a job generation area for the city. 100,000 jobs in the future. If we were going to lose our share of the state income tax, well, we may be better off to say, you know what, forget the jobs base. We should build, you know, the Mall of Arizona or whatever, focus on the retail, the local sales tax, instead of, you know, creating jobs, which not only does the city benefit from, but the state benefits from those jobs as well. So we try to use those arguments and others, and have prevailed largely today.
Okay. Vice Mayor.
Thank you. I appreciate you doing that. That was part of what I wanted to talk about, is the whole issue that this, I think people voted for the Voter Protection Act. They think that the things that have been passed by the voters are protected, but that's only true for things that were passed after the Voter Protection Act was passed. It wasn't retroactive. The concern I have is that in this last year, this became an appropriation in the budget, mm-hmm. as opposed to a formula. And I'm very concerned with it moving forward as an appropriation. I think that we as a council need to direct you to not go in that direction. This is really critical to us. And I think that when it's an appropriation, it then, rather than being part of an agreement, it looks like a gift. And I think that that's really dangerous. The other question I had was, Chris, you know, you talked, when we did all of those hearings, which I'm assuming we're going to do with the budget again this year, and we talk about how much we spend on public safety. If you look at the income tax and the sales tax revenues that we're getting from the state through state shared revenues, how does that measure up against how much we spend for public safety here in the city of Mesa? Would those two numbers cover the amount that we're spending on public safety?
I believe that when we combine the sales tax and the state income tax, we just barely, or maybe not even close, not even, no, they don't even pick up, they don't even quite pick up the total cost for police and fire services. So it's a significant issue for the city, because those are the two major, you know, resources of the city that we have out there that we rely upon on an annual basis.
And my recollection was that it wasn't even, I mean, it wasn't like a million or two off, that it was significantly off.
It's substantial.
I actually have Chris's favorite.
Oh, there.
Yeah. So if you look at our total police and fire, that totals 185.6 million. Okay, and the state shared revenue portion that goes to the general fund is 87.1 million, because that doesn't include the HERF money. So it's,
thank you,
still significant shortfall.
Scott, real quick, what is the total amount we receive from sales tax and fees? Does that add up to public safety? Or maybe throw that up on Elmo.
The sales tax is 84.6 million from the local sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
So those two combined, that's what I was trying to understand.
Right.
The combination of sales tax and state shared income tax, both of those combined are not sufficient. And that's what that chart should be showing, Jim.
107.
Are not sufficient to even cover all of the public safety expenses. They're close. It's close, but it's not.
That's
but it's
what
so
I wanted to get out, that those, that's how important that state shared revenue is to the city, and not just this city, but all cities.
Okay. Rex?
So basically what general fund shows is that all the revenue we receive from the state, basically the state shared revenue, not the the highway funds, and all our sales tax doesn't equal what our fire and police expenditures are?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, what else do you have?
The next issue that I'd like to cover is supporting efforts to provide additional funding for the State Transportation Acceleration Needs Account. This was a fund, as you know, that was established last year when the legislature appropriated $307 million during the session, and of which 60% of that went to the MAG region, and that of that $20.3 million was then appropriated by the MAG Regional Council and confirmed by ADOT to be used for the Williams Gateway right-of-way preservation. Transportation is going to be a big item at the legislature. We've heard it's going to be a priority issue, not only for some individual legislators like Senator Vershoor and Andy Biggs, who led the effort last year to get this. They've already indicated they want to get $200 million a year for the next 5 years. In addition, a bill was dropped just yesterday that's actually going to be heard next Tuesday, Senate Bill 1049, that would make a $450 million appropriation to the STAN account, which would generate $270 million for the MAG region. The little caveat with that legislation is that they're proposing that $450 million would come from the state rainy day fund that is currently set aside for this fiscal year. There's about $675 million in the current rainy day fund, and that they would take $450 million from that. My understanding is it's the majority party's intent that they would replenish the rainy day fund next year, so that they would not be it would not be reducing it permanently. They would replenish it from this year's revenues, or next year's revenues. So that bill is coming up next Tuesday. The council may or may not want to give us some direction on that. In addition, we know that the governor on Monday is likely to propose that highway bonds be extended from a 20-year life to a 30-year, which would allow for refinancing of state highway bonds, which would then generate additional monies that could be used for state highways. However, indications are that, again, the majority program is going to include opposition to any increased statewide debt, which this would fall under. And then finally, at least one member from the from the minority party is going to recommend indexing the gas tax. This is something that, frankly, as we've talked about in the past, does not have the support needed in the legislature because many legislators have signed no tax pledges. So this would be in, they couldn't meet, fulfill their no tax pledge quote. However, at 18 cents, that's where we're at right now. We're 40th in the country in the gas tax. It hasn't been increased since 1984, I believe. Yes, 1984. And then finally, one other issue that's going to be looked at is the elimination, potential elimination of the gas tax totally, and replacing that with an equivalent, with a tax, a sales tax on gasoline sales that would be revenue neutral in the first year. So the thought is, and they, and MAG is working on generating some numbers as well as some other folks, is the thought is that as the state grew, population grew, and others, that we would gain more through long term through a sales tax on gasoline than we would through just the static 18-cent gas tax. So those are four or five different transportation issues that are likely to arise. We do recommend that we support efforts for additional funding for the STAN account. We certainly support the Senator Vershore's and Andy Biggs's, Representative Biggs' efforts for the $200 million a year for 5 years. Council may or may not wish to weigh in on the $450 million proposal, which we understand may be tried to be fast-tracked.
Okay, comments on it, Rex?
Is the thinking on borrowing the money this year from the rainy day fund that it's cheaper to buy land now than get in the position in Ahwatukee where you're bulldozing houses and factories, particularly around Williams Gateway where the land is available but fast being built on, the new freeway going down there? Is that the thought?
Mayor Hawker, Councilmember Griswold, I'm not sure that the thought is to get as much money into transportation to do exactly what you suggested so that we don't run into the Ahwatukee problems on future freeways, that we've got urgent freeway and transportation priorities needed, as opposed as the reason to why using the rainy day account as opposed to an appropriation that's put in next year's budget. I can't speak on behalf of the legislature for their thinking on that.
Mayor Hawker, Councilmember Griswold, I will just add, though, that the Senate Bill 1049 was introduced with an emergency clause, and what that means procedurally is that it can, if it is fast-tracked, as Jim has indicated that all indications are, it would become effective upon the signature of the governor. So, in effect, in a fast-tracking scenario, early February, if this bill was fast-tracked and the governor deemed it to be something that she would sign, it could become law at that time. Where going through the normal budget process, you're talking about mid-year before a state budget's approved, and so that may be some of the rationale that they're thinking, because obviously whether, depending on how you skin the cat, we all know that transportation is a major issue, and I think they're trying to address some of those needs, and whether that's the right remedy or not is to be determined, but that could be some of their thinking.
Because that was part of the agreement on the proving grounds, the Levine property down there is setting aside the freeway corridor, not building houses, factories in the middle of it. But there's still a huge corridor of land down there that we have not gotten the right-of-way to. And either you tell property owners you can't build on your land for 10 years, which doesn't go really well, or you let them build and then you're going to be buying it from them. So acquiring that land as fast as possible is probably a high priority for ours. Financial future.
Having fought that battle with MAG, we're I think the only land acquisition out of the money that the first stand account, there is no other real estate advance purchase, and the thought behind that was most of them wanted to see actual construction take place. So they wanted concrete on the ground instead of having what I thought was a more astute long-term program of acquiring the right-of-way and saving more money long-term. So that's still a battle that when you're in office for 2 years as a legislature, you want to see a portion of freeway paved. You don't want to have land that you purchase that doesn't get built on for 10 years. They don't get as much reward from their citizens for that. So it's a little bit of a mental gymnastics that has to be played to show the magnitude of the savings by, as Rex pointed out, preventing those buildings from taking place, which they have a right to if you don't acquire that property. So I think we'll continue to try to play long-term economics versus short-term and convince that there really is a long-term benefit. When we originally passed the first freeway monies, I would have bought all the right away before I built lane mile one, so that then the citizens knew where it was going to go and they could plan for it and then do the constructability issue went along the way. But you know, that's was not embraced. Everyone again wanted concrete put down. I like more the $200 million consistency over the next 5 years than I do a $400 million and then maybe nothing and taking it from rainy day fund. So I'd rather go in that direction, knowing that it's a state need to get that done. Also the constructability. When we looked at the stand money, there's a lot of roads and stuff that just aren't ready. Tribal agreements, whatever might be in the way of doing that. So to really move forward, I'd kind of like to know what the five-year plan is on what roads they would do. If $200 million came in, what would the $1 billion get you and where? Because I think we need to certainly be at the table on that. I really like the sales tax. If we can't get it indexed, at least as oil prices and gasoline goes up, if it's a sales tax, in effect, you do have a little bit of indexing that's inadvertently applied to that. highway bonds, 20 years versus 30. I don't know, it's kind of like a home mortgage. I always like to go short and pay them off in 15 or 10 if I can and not have so much interest accumulate. So I'm a little split on that one. I could see it either way. I'd like to see how much it does free up and what the life of a program is. And I guess you get back to the right-of-way acquisitions with some of that money. So maybe would be my thought process on that one. Do it cautiously. Vice Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. I think I agreed with everything you said there. I'm concerned about the rainy day fund. I've lived in Arizona for almost a quarter of a century now. And even though we don't get physical rain, we get economic. We have those rainy days, it seems like, cyclically every few years. And I think that when we were just having this previous discussion about state shared revenue, if that rainy day fund is not appropriately funded, the first place everybody's going to be looking, in my opinion, will be at our state shared revenues. So I think for us to not protect the rainy day fund is short-sighted. Also, I've really appreciated the fact that they've been putting money in there. I think that they're getting close to a number that's a really good number. I think having $1 billion in that rainy day fund would not be too much. The issue of indexing versus going for the gas tax, I think the gas tax makes sense. If you think about how much gasoline costs, people have been feeling like we have the highest gas prices ever. But when adjusted for inflation, that actually is not true. You go back to, I think it was the early 80s or the late 70s, and you actually have higher gas prices. But you know, you take inflation into account here, and it. I think that the sales tax thing that I don't think you mentioned here, but Scott, you mentioned yesterday that Georgia has done this. I think that that's a good model. One question about the MAG situation. You said 60% of the money goes to the MAG area. Would I be correct in saying that 80% of the people who live in Arizona live within the MAG region?
You would not.
It is not 80. Okay.
No.
It's 66%, Keno?
I've heard different numbers, but I think it's more than 60.
Yeah. I don't know the exact numbers, but it's not. We have about 3 point, we're up to about 4 million out of 6 million. Would be roughly, so two-thirds, right around two-thirds.
Okay, so about two-thirds. And the logic being that people in the MAG region go in other places in the state, and we need to help pay for the state. But I just thought, you know, we have people who listen to this, and they might think, well, how come MAG region got 60%? The highest number of people in the state live here. But we need to help fund those rural roads, too. And, you know, one of my things is, let's get that I-10 all the way through to California before that gets, I guess it'd be an ugly drive. Okay, thank you.
Down to Tucson.
Okay, that's, anything else? You've got Williams Gateway appropriation and a few other items?
Absolutely, Mayor. Mayor and Council, last year we were very happy that the state, and it, well, really realizing some of our East Valley delegation, specifically Senators Tib Traney and Brashear and Representative Biggs, knowing what a catalyst for job creation Williams Gateway will be in the future and what the impact it will have on the East Valley, helped us in appropriating some money. In this case, it was $1.1 million that the legislature appropriated to Williams Gateway last year. Now, the practical impact of that was that $500,000 of that $1.1 million went to a fire suppression system on the north apron of the airport. And recently, as you've seen, Embraer had come into sign a contract with Williams Gateway, sign a lease, and also the pending deal with Cessna. Both of those developments will occur on the north apron of the airport. And so, obviously, to build the structures to support those maintenance facilities, you need a fire suppression system. And so this is where the state last year became a partner with the city in helping to develop Williams Gateway and support economic development at Williams Gateway Airport. And we hope that that effort will continue this year. We want to work with our East Valley delegation to continue that support and appropriations, whether it be $1 million or $2 million or $500,000 or whatever the case may be, can go a long way towards helping spur further development. So with Council's direction, we'd like to continue to pursue those avenues with the legislature for infrastructure improvements.
Go for it. You've got sex offender restrictions, County Island fire protection, photo radar enforcement, development impact fees.
All issues, Mayor, you've seen before, and we did want to bring those back to you to highlight. Of course, the Council approved through the League resolutions process the sex offender restrictions, 1,500-foot restrictions between child care facilities and daycare, schools and daycare facilities. We've spoken with some legislators. The Vice Mayor came down last year to the legislature, and we spoke with some legislators who are interested in pursuing this legislation. Gary Pierce ran it for us last year, but of course now he has gone on to serve on the CorpCom Commission and will be pursuing other avenues of this, but that was something that Council looked at during the League resolutions process. And quickly, as you all know, the County Island fire issue is it continues to take different twists and turns. Last year, of course, it was passed and then struck down by the courts. The counties and certain legislators and others continue to look at possible legislative remedies to that, but we want to make sure that whatever they do is consistent with what Mayor and Council has directed, that we should not have any mandates on our fire department to go and serve outside of our residents, serve in boundaries outside of our residents, and so we'll continue to stick with the direction that Council has given. Also on photo enforcement, Mayor, as you know, we've really, over the last several years, tried to educate our legislators on the importance of photo enforcement as a tool that our police department uses to increase safety on our streets. And frankly, we had made a lot of progress in the last few years, people realizing that red light cameras and others really do help cut down on accidents and fatalities at some of our intersections. Now, the last year, the focus has shifted, frankly, from the streets to the freeways on the role of photo enforcement, and we, frankly, I expect that to continue this session, but we want to make sure that whatever remedies that they look at towards photo enforcement restrictions or limitations on freeways will not impact our program here in Mesa. And then last issue to bring up, very timely issue as we prepare in the coming months to get back our preliminary findings of our development fee update. The last year, the Home Builders of Central Arizona pursued legislation that would have dramatically altered the way that cities compute and spend development impact fees. Frankly, with the governor's help, the governor's veto last year, we were able to stop that piece of legislation. We fully expect to see some legislation introduced this year. The city has been a stakeholder in meetings with different home builder associations trying to work out some compromise legislation. We hope to bring that forward, though we also expect a competing bill as well that is more in the nature of the bill that we lobbied against last year. And so just wanted to let you all know that we fully expect to see this issue back again this legislative session. Be glad to entertain any questions over those issues or any others, and thank you, Mayor.
Let me just bring up the payday loan issue. I know we talked about not having distance restrictions or had a vote, mm-hmm. but I think there was also some discussion that the legislature needs to review the predatory nature of some of those establishments, and I don't think there was any question that I think there was at least the majority of the council thought that that was a good idea to take a look at whether what the law is that they enacted to allow them to take place and the scale and the magnitude of what they're doing is really the intent, or whether they want to tweak that.
Mayor, we'll say that we've already received some indications that even though the usury laws that enabled that practice do not expire until 2010, that there most likely will be some kind of effort this year to extend that period early in order to, you know, guarantee a little bit more of a safety net before the 2010 expiration. And so I think that we will see some payday loan legislation this year, and of course we'll bring that back to council once we see some language and seek direction from council on exactly what avenue they're trying to take to reform that area.
All right, Vice Mayor.
Scott, what you just said led me to believe it's not an avenue to reform, but an avenue to continue, to extend.
That, Vice Mayor, I think from what we're hearing from the industry, that's exactly what their intentions are. Obviously, now what they have proposed is an outreach effort to the cities to and other entities to listen to our concerns, listen to what our councils have said as far as their concerns with these institutions, and would hope to incorporate some form of reform into any extension of the Enabling Act. And so we'll have to, of course, follow council direction when we see what concessions they're willing to make.
And I think I mentioned that when I brought this up with a legislator, I talked to a legislator about it and said that, you know, we had had a discussion at our council, and the feeling of the council was that the legislature needed to address this. You know, he said to me, well, really, I think that this should be done by cities. You ought to address it through your zoning regulations.
Mayor, Vice Mayor, if I could add just real quick, just this morning when I was logging on to the legislative website, I did see two bills dropped. I did not get a chance to review them, but it appeared Senator Chuck Gray dropped two bills, and I believe that his bills would actually work towards curtailing payday loans.
So immediately or sunset it in 2010?
Mayor, it appeared that one bill, and again, spent just seconds, appeared to move the sunset date back from 2010 to 2008.
All right. Okay. Rex.
In any of that negotiation, the discussion of moving their interest rates down from 360% down to lower, like allowing two rollovers rather than three, and that's been the big one to trade off on an industry that there is some need for small loans on certain, you know, abilities until the banks are willing to step into that market, which I'm hoping they will someday, and not charge 300 and some percent in interest. But the I don't think the industry is voluntarily stepping up and say, please cut our profits by a third.
Mayor and Councilmember Griswold, I think what we've seen demonstrated by the legislature or by certain segments of the legislature over the last two sessions has been the realization that rollovers are of great concern, and several bills have been introduced mainly focusing in on the rollover issue, and certainly we will bring back legislation that incorporates some of that, Councilmember Griswold, so that council can decide whether it goes far enough or too far, or however the council may see fit to address that issue.
And I believe the other bill that Senator Gray introduced placed a cap on interest rates. I do not recall what that cap was, maybe 36%, but don't quote me on that, but it was a cap.
Because they've created a special industry that everybody else is capped by the usury laws, except this one industry they've created said, charge as much as you'd like, almost. And, you know, back east they call it loan sharking, and here we've made it legal in Arizona. So it's a very devastating in certain parts of our economy, particularly on the very poor that can't read contracts. So, thank you.
Okay. Scott, did you have something?
No, Mayor, I was just mentioning that you stole my thunder because that was on my list of things to add to this.
Oh, okay. Any other thunder items? You want thunder or hurricanes?
Anybody need one?
All right. Okay, thanks for the legislative update. Item four, acknowledging receipt of minutes of various boards and committees. We have three. We have a motion and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes. Three reports on meetings and our conferences attended. Any updates? All right. Scheduling of meetings and general information. Mr. Brady.
Yes, Mayor, just quickly, I'm going to have a couple of handouts I'd like to provide the council. First is a draft of a letter that will be going out tomorrow to community leaders. It's kind of an end of the year report. Just want to give council first review of that, and just so you have it, and then I'll give you a final copy later, just so you're aware of that. Also, beginning on Tuesday, we begin handing out what are called customer service value cards to the employees of the for the city. It outlines 12 different values related to customer service that we've adopted. This idea actually came from an employee group in the city, so I'd like to pass those out. The council can also have copies of that and see what the employees will be focusing on during the coming year. And then finally, the vice mayor mentioned this earlier. We want to let the council know that we will be having the town hall meetings. We have proposed dates and found some locations. We'll be coordinating with your schedules. We've got the locations. We want to make sure the dates work with the council members, so you should be getting that shortly. We also are proposing to change the format just slightly. I feel like this would be an opportunity during this round of town hall meetings really to have a little more engagement between the departments, those that provide the services, and the residents that would be attending the town hall meetings. Wanting to have more of an opportunity for dialogue at the department level. So what we're proposing the format would be is we would have a general kind of introduction at the beginning of the meeting, maybe covering some of the broader highlights of the city, the spinning wheel that we talked about, and maybe some other broad areas. It'd be maybe a 10-minute brief introduction. But then we would invite the public, and we would probably have tables set up. Probably about four or five different departments would be there, police, fire, utilities, neighborhood services, or others. And we would rotate maybe every 10, 15 minutes so that residents can go and hear a brief presentation, 5 to 7 minute presentation from those departments, and be able to have questions or ask questions directly to those departments in that area. We're asking the departments to focus their presentations on a district basis, so to talk about what's happening in the area in which we're making the presentation that day. If there's a utilities projects coming up in the next year or so, they would be prepared to talk about that, or a transportation project, we would be able to do that. So it's a little bit different format. We feel like maybe a little more engaging, a little more informational sharing, and we also want the residents to be able to talk directly to our departments and really have that engagement. We will have a service priority survey or some kind of survey to get a feel from residents about the issues in their district and the priorities as far as services and what they would like to see more or less of. So that would be part of the process too. So we'll be coming to you, I believe today, we finally been able to secure sites or at least have some tentative dates. We want to make sure those work with the council members. But we need to obviously have venues that are a little bit larger, or at least large enough that we can put
the tables in where the departments can work, probably not the little room we squeezed in Councilman Rawls when we did that last year. That probably wouldn't work. But we are looking at more like junior high schools and some of our own venues here. So that you'll be, I think today or tomorrow, you'll be contacted with those dates. Good. Thank you. And then as far as the meetings coming up, we have a utility committee meeting directly after this study session. And of course, we have Monday, January 8th, our study session and city council meeting. We have our Thursday meetings on the January 11th and 18th. And our next, then the second council meeting for January is January 22nd. Thank you.
All right. Any questions? All right. Do we have any requests to speak?
We have no speakers, Mayor.
Okay. Then the study session is adjourned.